I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show. I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show. Hey, this is Howard Jacobson. I'm here at Vita VeganCon 2013 talking with Dan Hanley from thegayvegans.com. Hello, Dan.
Hey, Howard, how are you?
Excellent.
Good.
So I wanted to talk to you because we were talking yesterday. You kind of had a real interesting story and a different take on the vegan community than a lot of folks. So first of all, when did you first transition or even hear about the idea of a plant-based diet?
Sure. I was in the Navy and heard different stories from around the world around people who did not eat meat. And I was fascinated, coming from Central Michigan, the typical all-American story. And I learned more about their cultures that didn't even include meat, or their cultures where meat was a very small portion of the total plate, unlike in the United States where meat is a big portion and then you have little portions of potatoes or vegetables or something. And then I, as I was able to gain a little more control over what I ate, processing out of the military, I decided that for ethical reasons, I wanted to do everything I could not to consume meat. And that was 17 years ago. And that process began by just meeting other people who only ate plant-based, and starting to go to a lot of potlucks. I became vegan in the South, a little more difficult. This was 17 years ago, so it was 96. Not a lot of plant-based options on menus and restaurants. Not really a lot of plant-based recipe books or cookbooks out there. So I learned to eat really delicious food from going to potlucks and eating what other people prepared.
Yeah, that's really important for people who are trying to transition to find a community, even if it's really small.
Definitely.
You know, I remember the first time, like, a friend of mine told me, oh, here's what you can cook. You can make, steamed kale, sweet potato, and hummus. And I'm like, wow, that sounds good, but I didn't do it for like 18 months because it's still... And then I went over to his house and he made it for me, and I'm like, oh.
Exactly.
You know, like, just seeing it and seeing it being a normal part of someone else's life can kind of flip that switch for you.
Exactly. And what I learned right away was that potato chips and Pepsi are both vegan. And so what I had to do is realize that for my entire life, I had consumed products that were injected or fortified with what my body needed. And now I had to go directly to the source. So, for instance, I had never had kale, collard greens, Swiss chard before I became vegan. I don't even remember hearing about kale. I had never had tofu. And then there's this joke in my marriage where my husband calls what I would prepare when we were first dating Dan's meal, which is a frozen Amy's burrito with tater tots. That's kind of what I ate. You know, mainly when you're single, you don't really cook a lot by yourself. But now whenever we've had a long day, he'll say, hey, let's do a Dan's meal tonight. But predominantly we eat in our place plant-based dinners. We eat a lot of kale, Swiss chard, all the things that I had never heard of that we grow in our own garden. along with a lot of legumes. And then my favorite is blackened tofu, which we add along with that. So it's all a process. I think the biggest obstacle is taking the time to learn what food gives you what. And so that you can go, you know, begin this journey of, okay, if I have a serving of blueberries in a smoothie with a serving of this, like I love to mix blueberries and kale in a smoothie. That's a great start to my day because I'm already getting a lot of those amazing things that kale and blueberries give you. Or if I haven't had a dark leafy green by the end of the day, I make sure that I incorporate that into dinner.
Right. So, yeah. If you eat by the rainbow.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So that's what it kind of looks like now. But I definitely have to say that it is a process and it's all about learning. And these days, you know, you can spend 10 minutes on the web and find out amazing information about what food does for you and to you. And that could be, you know, good, you know, these foods do this for you, or it could be bad, these foods do this for you. And you want to stay away from some of those. But we've come a long way in the 17 years and the 9 years that Mike's been vegan in what we decide to prepare at home.
Mm-hmm. So what have the impact been on your health, your energy, your vitality?
Well, I'm 47 years old, and again, I decided to go plant-based because of animal welfare. I didn't want to be part of harming any living being. And but now at 47 years old, I reap the benefits, the health benefits of not consuming animals. So I would say that I feel amazing. I don't know what I would have felt like if I had been consuming animals for 17 years, so it's difficult to answer that. But I would say last Sunday, Mike and I ran our first half marathon, and I'm sure, or probably sure, that we could have done it had we been still consuming meat, but neither one of us is a professional runner. We decided to do this as a fundraising effort, and we trained for a couple months, and last Sunday we both finished. We feel pretty good, and our doctors tell us that our blood work is amazing. So I think there are things that, as a 47-year-old male, I'm not as concerned about because I don't consume meat.
And the prostate stuff.
The prostate stuff, anything where food touches in your body on the way out, I think, we're pretty fortunate. It doesn't mean that it can't happen. I just think it means that we have a less likelihood of it happening as long as we remain balanced in everything else. And that's important. It's important not to go off on a lot of junk food binging and to remain true to make sure that we're eating all of those types of plants and vegetables and fruits that do so much good for our body.
Right. I just want to, I want to emphasize that what we're talking about, at least in the in Hull and in the China study community, is not vegan or not, but whole food plant-based.
Definitely.
If your diet is, 95% plus there, that's what we're talking about, not just, finding the latest fake meat.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Or, yeah.
Deep fried, vegan Twinkies.
Exactly. Our biggest processed food that we eat the most of would probably be tofu. And we're doing sprouted tofu now, but yeah, it's easy to want to jump into a Whole Foods market and buy the latest Amy's vegan mac and cheese. And that's like a comfort food. But what we really try to focus on is, have we had kale today? Have we had collard greens? Have we had Swiss chard? What are we going to have fruit-wise? Blueberries, raspberries, strawberries? Do we have flax in the house? What's our favorite nut these days? Right now it's Brazil nuts. We just love. We still do soy milk. We make our own soy milk at home, so it doesn't have things like carrageenan. We don't become wasteful around the environment of having all those boxes of soy milk around. And we also make hemp milk and macadamia nut milk. And we just keep processing around what is best for our bodies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's that awareness.
Exactly.
Is almost everything. Like if you teach someone, you know, to eat vegan, I would rather teach them to pay attention to how they feel after they eat, and have them go to McDonald's.
Right. Exactly.
If they go once and really have that awareness, they are going to naturally transition to foods that make them feel good.
Right. You're exactly right. That's a great point.
So tell us about your blog and what you do in the community.
Sure. So our blog, again, is thegayvegans.com. And in June, it'll be 2 years for us. I'm a fundraiser by trade. And so I've had a fundraising blog for a long time, but I wanted to do something more about what my passion is. And with our blog, it's not necessarily a food blog. It's basically the story of two gay guys who are married who live in a suburb of Denver. And we happen to be vegan. We happen to be married and not ashamed of it. We don't try to hide the fact that we're a married gay couple or a vegan couple. And we try to just promote things like compassion. We try to promote why we're plant-based. We try to promote equality. We try to promote being a voice for the voiceless. And that list of voiceless is as long as the road is from Denver to Portland. We think about the young man in Tehran who is perceived to be gay who was beheaded last week. We think of the woman who's being raped every night by her husband, in quotes. We think of the chickens and the pigs and the cows. We think of people living in extreme poverty. We think of homeless teens who have been kicked out because their parents believe that they are gay and that it's wrong. So our list of voiceless includes many, many, many people and animals, and we're constantly trying to engage people in conversations around how to make life better for those voiceless.
Mm. So do you have any thoughts on sort of what's the relationship between being gay and being vegan? Are there similarities? Are there things one group can learn from the other?
I think it all begins around compassion, honestly. I don't know if I'm a more compassionate person because I'm gay, or I'm a more compassionate person because I live plant-based. But I do know that I feel more, being plant-based was because I wanted to become more compassionate, and having lived openly gay for many years, I strive to be more compassionate because I don't want anyone ever to be treated poorly or with violence or threats of violence or hate because of who they publicly are. And so I think there's that connection there. I also believe that anyone who is fighting for equality or the voiceless, regardless of what category they are in, has an immediate connection with other people who are voiceless or perceived voiceless. So I believe that's a connection as well.
Mm-hmm. And when I hear you talking, the word that keeps coming to my mind is inclusionary.
Yes.
And so many of the sort of ethical movements tend to become exclusionary. It sounds like you're consciously trying to bridge some gaps.
Oh, definitely.
Between communities that have felt beleaguered, maybe, and under siege, and can respond by turning inward as opposed to reaching outward.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think a great example I use is that if I see a lot of either in wrong interpretation or disagreement amongst people who are plant-based and take that a step further and become animal rights activists. So many different ways of doing it, or you're not doing it this way, or you should be this way, or you should be no kill in this shelter, or no kill doesn't work, or this group is terrible, or this group is great. And I feel that my best memory is in the 80s when tens of thousands of people were dying every year of HIV/AIDS. And activists got together and said, listen, we cannot fight amongst ourselves while our brothers and sisters are dying by the thousands. And you know, in 89, 90, 91, 92, 45 plus thousand people were dying every year from HIV/AIDS. And many groups made decisions, we're going to focus on this. We're going to focus on supporting, on finding a cure, on supporting and caring for sick people, and not worry about where we completely don't agree with everyone else. And sometimes I feel that when people are fighting for the voiceless, especially voiceless animals, that people get bogged down in where they don't agree and where this person is doing this wrong and that group is doing that wrong, and they don't keep their eyes on the prize, so to speak. And so I always get to have fond memories of when all of us didn't disagree, but we knew our next door neighbor was going to die in 3 days and he had to be cared for. Or our neighbor across the street, you know, she just found out that she was HIV positive and she would live maybe another 3 months. And that, what can we do as a community, set our disagreements aside, to care for these people and to ensure that the message of preventing HIV and supporting those who were dying was like the top issue.
So what would you like to leave people with, maybe who are transitioning to a plant-based diet or thinking about it? What's one piece of advice you'd give them?
I think that for me, again, being 47 years old and looking more at my health these days, is really just making sure that what you're eating is benefiting your body. So, you know, I like an ice-cold cola just as much as the next person, or I love a vegan ice cream sandwich, or I really love Amy's mac and cheese just as much as anybody else. But if I'm gonna have that, I have to make sure that that is not all I'm eating, and that that's more like a treat once in a while and not part of my daily consumption of food. So I'm always looking, always at what is this going to do for me. And now there are people, and Mike and I totally get this, that we may not be able to afford a basket of organic blueberries. We may not afford to, you know, the newest raspberries that just came in, or you know, kale is slightly more affordable, but Swiss chard is more expensive depending on the season. So there's that whole affordability level. But what we can find are huge bags of brown rice. We can find big bushels at farmers market of kale that is less expensive. So I would say that, you know, look, veganism or plant-based diets become more expensive when you look at processed foods, but I don't think they're any more expensive than a meat-based lifestyle when you're just buying fruits and vegetables. And so that's what I would say. You know, as many fruits and vegetables as you can eat every day. And I'm a huge kale fan. And if you think you don't like kale, you know, try one of the thousands of recipes online. What we do is we take kale, a little cayenne pepper, a little garlic, and a little salt and pepper, and boom. It's just, it's delicious and nutritious, and it's going to go a long way. And we can do that with Swiss chard and collard greens as well. So fruits and veggies, lots of them. That's what I would want to leave people with.
All right. Preaching, brother.
Yeah.
All right, Dan Hanley of thegayvegans.com. It's been such a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm thrilled to be here.
Let's take this home with some gratitudes. First of all, thanks to Mama Earth. You have been so very, very good to me. Second, Will Ridenour donated the use of his beautiful song Sabali Dawn as the theme music for this show. You can find out more about Will's music at willridenour.com. Third, thanks to all the patrons of the Plant Yourself podcast for your financial support. You can read the names of all the patrons at any show notes at plantyourself.com. If you would like to become a patron to show your gratitude for the work I'm doing and help support it, you can do so at plantyourself.com/gift. That's G-I-F-T, all lowercase. And finally, I want to thank you, the listener, for making all of this possible, for giving me a reason to reach out to people, to have conversations, to edit, produce, publicize, all the stuff that I do is for you, so that we can continue to have conversations and continue to ripple out healing and transformation into the world.